one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Curly Wiesel, and I hope that for all of those who did celebrate, not everybody does, but for all of those who did celebrate Mother's Day, I hope it went all right. I have done something in my household where I have just decided that Mother's Day is a holiday where we go to get high tea. I don't know why. That's not a traditional Mother's Day breakfast thing. I think usually you just go and get, like, eggs. We went to a buffet a lot when I was younger. Or you just, like, you know, like, cook breakfast at home. But no, I'm like, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, Mother's Day means high tea. Mother's Day means scones and cream. I don't know why. I'm not British. Like, who do I think I am? And yet, I've started the tradition, and Pearl and I love it, and that's all that matters. That's really all that matters to me. Now, this week is going to be so fun because my colleague Todd Martins is back on the podcast. And just having Todd for an hour to talk is such a delight because Todd is so smart and yet he is a friend. And so he lets me yell at him and it's just absolutely wonderful. Beyond that, I am traveling a bunch in the next few weeks. I have a lot of exciting stories to bring you. I cannot wait for it. I hope you all are coping with the fact that it is mid-May. It is mid-May somehow, and it's kind of making me ill. Where did March and April go? I think they were stolen from us, like the years of COVID. They're just gone. Somebody was playing with a time turner and they just goofed on us. Like, I don't know what happened, but it is somehow mid-May. Like, school is getting out soon. I don't know how that... We're almost halfway through 2026, but we are in it together and we are going to laugh and have as much fun as possible while also ignoring the very rapid passing of time. I don't think I have any other housekeeping stuff, but yeah, I've been preparing a few episodes for you. They're going to be fun. And this one is truly at the top of the list. It's amazing. Have so much fun. We'll get into it on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. Many discounts from Becky. Truly. I know if you're someone who like maybe skips past it, if you're curious about going to Disney World, don't skip past, like, there's a lot of deals you got to know about. Okay. I'll see you on the other side. Love you. Bye for now. Welcome home. Are you a little sad to be off the Disney adventure? Because it looked amazing.
I was back to back. And it's the first time I ever thought I need to do back to back to back and possibly to back.
Wait, you did two of them?
We did. We did a 3-day and then the 4-day. Because again, adventure, huge ship. Absolutely amazing. Tons of stuff to do on board. All the characters and the shopping and just how big it is. And the shows. Oh my gosh. I think I actually experienced the best dinner show I have ever seen on Disney Cruise Line, Hollywood Spotlight. It's set up like old 30s, 40s glam inside.
No!
And they have musicians, and then the characters come in. And then they go to tables.
So multiple characters?
Multiple characters.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you made it back and that you are at least awake enough to tell us about these major discounts, because I saw the news before we talked, and I couldn't wait to talk to you. Tell us everything about these Disney Cruise Line discounts.
Yeah, do you remember the last discount that came out? And I said, they've never done this before, and it's one of the best deals ever. Now we have kids sale 50% off the voyage fare. If you book by June 14th, so it's you got some time here, you get 50% off the voyage fare for up to 3 kids, ages, you know, because normally it's you know, 3 to 9. This is up to age 17 on select sailings with the purchase of 2 full fare guests in the same cabin. So if you have 2 adults that are paying full fare, you get up to 3 kids at 50% off. And that's available on select sailings and ships from October 1st, 26 to March 27th, 2027. I've seen them available on every ship except for the Adventure. There's not a better time to sail with DCL, especially because they are still running. All right, for those of us who don't have kids, they're still running that 25% off voyage fare for select sailings between April 2026 now and July. But you get that 25 or 20% off and up to 250 onboard credit at the same time. So if you've ever wanted to do a Disney cruise, now's the time to do it. And there's also, outside of these offers, you can find really great savings on sailings from San Diego and even Alaska. So if you were ever interested in doing Alaska and it's not part of these offers, they are still lower than they've ever been before.
Wow. And remember,
Crazy.
reaching out to Mouse Fan Travel is the best way to book this, because I say that as somebody who books cruises with Mouse Fan Travel, because parsing through these on your own is so annoying. You do not want to do it. Trust me. And so to have a professional who can really tell you which deal is best for you and how to save the most money is so helpful, and it costs you nothing.
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 Nothing. Thank you so much, Becky. I can't wait to hear what other deals you have later on in the show. Welcome back. We are so lucky because we have the LA Times' Todd Martins on the podcast today. Todd is a colleague and a dear friend, but I also consider him the definitive voice of all things theme parks. To me, the discussion is not over, and in some way, hasn't even really begun until he weighs in. Nobody writes about these experiences like he does, which is why it's so exciting that the Los Angeles Times just launched a newsletter with Todd's brilliant writing at the forefront. Mr. Todd's Wild Ride, a perfect name, by the way, and one I immediately voted yes for when it came up in the group chat, is the best of Todd, the best of theme parks, and the best of a California perspective that you can't find anywhere else. This is, after all, the city where it all began, where Walt Disney first made his mark on society, where the first, which people, listen, Disney history people will try to argue with me on that, but I'm claiming California for the first big Disney win, okay? That's just how I feel. I feel like he really made it once he was here before. That's how I feel. He really made it once he was here. I don't want to get into like Marceline lore and like the early stuff. No, nope. That's what I stand behind. This is where Walt Disney first made it huge, big, big. This is where the first ever Disney park opened. And where to this day, Walt Disney Imagineering and Disney Studios and even Josh D'Amaro primarily call home. This is the town where the core of the Walt Disney Company is based. And at its biggest hometown paper, the main voice about everything they do is our guy Todd. He's got a big job and even bigger success doing it. He is so talented, and he would barf and probably walk away if he heard me say that. But it's true, Todd. It's true. He looks at these theme parks with such a valued, critical eye while simultaneously caring so much about them in the same way we do. Which means, of course, that he's pretty passionate about the subject. And you know who else is pretty passionate about theme parks? Your resident girl who hops on the mic every week to scream about theme parks. So when you put the two of us together, things can get a little gloriously volatile. Todd and I once got into such a heated but deeply respectful argument that was so intense, like we got into it at Disney's Grand Californian, that a reporter from Variety, a reporter from Vanity Fair was sitting there laughing with us because he couldn't believe that this was our natural state. Just two friends out for a drink at night, getting at it. And that is what we're trying to channel some of today for you. We're trying out a loose, kind of new concept here on Very Amusing, and we couldn't start this one with anyone better. I just want my colleagues, my friends, the people I'm lucky enough to know firsthand from doing this, who just happen to be the greatest reporters and creators in the industry, I want to welcome them into my digital home and on the podcast more often. So when Todd launched his latest and greatest, I knew there was no one better to start with than him. We're calling this 3x3. And the way it works is that Todd is going to bring up three topics of theme park conversation, and so am I. And we're going to take turns. We're going to discuss, agree, argue, cackle, laugh at each other's extremely strong convictions, and just have a good time among friends who care about these things as deeply as the rest of us do. It's going to be fun. It's going to get heated. And at a minimum, we're going to get to hear the brightest brain in this sphere opine about, well, everything that I'm going to make him opine about. It's going to be so good. So buckle up, because we've got Mr. Todd himself here on Very Amusing. Todd! Welcome to Very Amusing.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited because this is just like an excuse for us to hang out during work hours.
I'm all for that and all for chatting and debating with you.
I mean, truly, I don't think we've ever gone an hour hanging out together where we didn't debate something.
No, well, especially because usually if we're hanging out, where chances are we're at the park and there's something that one of us is seeing that is like, I think this is awesome. And you're like, oh my God, this is horrible, or vice versa.
I believe we call that the rivers of light effect.
The greatest nighttime spectacular ever.
Yeah, I didn't have that one on the list for this little game, because I knew that it would derail the whole episode. But in retrospect, I got to say it was quite beautiful.
It was like a ballet on water.
And dare I add,
with
Todd,
floats.
better than having literally nothing there.
Yeah, although, but I do agree with you wholeheartedly on the kite show. I do miss that.
Oh, okay. As long as we are in agreement about kite tails, we should have no issues today. Now, as our listeners know, and as you know, we are each going to present a few topics. Todd and I, for anyone listening, have also prepared backup topics in case we have the same ones. So don't panic if that happens in real time. But I'll go first. Is that fine with you?
That sounds great.
Okay, Todd, the first topic, give me your thoughts on Disney California Adventure.
I have grown to really love Disney California Adventure, so much so that I think it's one of Disney's stronger North American theme parks. I would say, so yeah, it opened in 2001, as I'm sure all of your listeners know. It opened to not a lot of fanfare because people were disappointed. It lacked Disneyland style attractions. It lacked sort of brand themed environments.
Yeah.
But I think Disney has done a really good job of course correcting in California Adventure. The opening of Cars Land, I would say Cars Land is probably my second favorite land at the Disneyland Resort, second only to New Orleans Square, which has, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted Mansion, and of course was overseen by Walt. So, like, you know, so I think New Orleans Square, safe to say number one. But Cars Land, I feel like, is so majestic, especially if you walk in from the San Francisco area and you see the mountain range just sort of come alive before you. I once joked, you know, with coworkers, because I work at the LA Times and I work in the features department, and a lot of people in the features department write about nature and hikes and stuff like that. And I'm like, me being out in nature is just being in Cars Land.
Which I don't disagree with you on. It is beautiful. It's man-made, but like, it's gorgeous.
Now, I do have issues with other parts of the land. I'm not a big fan of San Francisco, which I think maybe you disagree with.
Oh, interesting.
Avengers Campus, I think, needs some work, but I'm hopeful that the two new attractions they're building will make it feel more fuller and will make it feel less like a downtown LA office park.
harsh, but deserve it. I mean, you had me with liking California Adventure, but I don't know if I would call it one of Disney's best American theme parks. I love California Adventure in the sense of, like, I don't know if you have any chaotic friends, just friends that are like very messy, but like you love them. They're so funny. They're so fun, but they will be 45 minutes late to dinner and have a wild excuse. Like, that's kind of how I view DCA. It's like, oh girl, like you're trying and it's just so fun to be here. You know, you're trying, like, do you have redeeming qualities? You have, you know, other factors that I don't really enjoy. But you know what? We're here and we're happy and we're having a good time. I would say I agree with you. Cars Land, exceptional. Avengers Campus has not aged well, but I do feel, and I'm trying to have a lot of perspective about DCA, and I wonder if you feel the same way, where I'm trying to appreciate it for this moment in time, because it feels like very soon, suddenly, it's going to be a completely different theme park, and I want to appreciate it being a little bit of a mixed bag while it still is.
I agree with that. I think I always go back to this moment. This was maybe 2013, 14. I was sitting with a friend in Carthay Circle, and this would have been, you know, Cars Land had just recently opened, and before Disney had built Galaxy's Edge, before Disney had built Avengers Campus. And my friend was just like, it's just really nice being in Carthay Circle right now. Disney feels calm and relaxed. Like, this is all going to change in a few years. And he was right. It has changed. And not that I still don't find parts of it can be calming and relaxing. I still enjoy Carthay Circle. I do think one thing, California Adventure, I think it does a good job of, and this is maybe a controversial topic, and I want to say it with caveats, I think it does a good job with Disney Live Entertainment. Like the Vivi Navidad show that they do during the holidays. I love that show. I love Donald and the three Caballeros and those characters. I think the Mulan Lunar New Year processional is really well done.
Yeah, huge fan of Lunar New Year. You know that.
Yeah. So I think DCA does a good job of bringing in like other cultures. That being said, when I praise live entertainment, DCA has a giant multi-thousand seat theater that is sitting empty.
That's my guy. That's my guy. Preaching to the choir. Absolutely bonkers. They haven't changed the ticket price. They haven't lowered it because they're missing a massive experience. And yet, no show. Would love to be out of the heat. No show.
No, it was great because, yeah, if you think about the ticket price, you're paying, you know, whatever you're paying to go to if you're getting a park hopper, you're paying $200, give or take, whatever the day is. But, you were seeing a Broadway quality show for like 45, 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And usually when they close an attraction, it's to build something else. Like, I understand, like, oh, we're going to get something out of this. When they close something to fix it for repairs, like, that makes sense. You want these things to keep working. They just close the show, but there's no show. There's just no show.
No show.
I mean, my listeners know this. The only way for my daughter to see, because she had a period where she was locked in and obsessed with Frozen the musical. The only way to see a musical on stage rendition of Frozen was to take her on a freaking cruise ship, because there was no Frozen the Hyperion. They don't have anything like that in Florida, and it's not on Broadway, and it wasn't touring near us anytime in the next year. I had to take her to the ocean to see something that was in Anaheim. It's crazy.
No, and I think it's important because you talk about like your daughter and like you talk about seeing those shows that were really high quality, whether it was the Frozen show or the Aladdin show. And that was going to be like a child's first experience with like live theater and a massive show like that. And you could do it in a place that 45 minutes I know is long maybe for a theme park, but it's still shorter than a 2.5 hour Broadway show in New York.
That oh, my God. And more kid friendly than one.
Exactly.
We've lost so much. We've lost so much. But yeah, okay. So it seems like we're kind of in agreement on California Adventure's current phase of growth.
Yeah, I think overall, I do wonder, like, what other parks are you, like, you don't think it's better than, like, Disney Hollywood Studios?
Well, I mean, that's bottom of the list for me. So, yeah, I do think it's better. Though I do like, their Fantasmic has grown on me. I guess it would be, I mean, I don't know if I've ranked them on the podcast, but, like, it's not better than Epcot. It's not better than Animal Kingdom, and I'm sure you agree on that.
Definitely agree on that.
It's just the juxtaposition of having, like, the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail, which is stunning. Mm. Stunning! Like, that's nature for me. That's hard, climbing on all that stuff with a 35-pound child. Like, that juxtaposed with when they put decals on the trash cans when they open Pixar Pier, it's like, whoa! Like, we have a little bit of everything here. So a park that was more solidly designed and not still in process. Like, it's so much a teenager where it's still, like, it's almost reached its final adult form. I just think I would rank it lower because of that, but I voluntarily spend tons of time there and I enjoy it, even though it is a kind of disparate experience.
I would agree with that. I'm glad before we move on to the other stuff, I'll just say real quick, I'm glad you mentioned Pixar Pier because I do think that was not like an improvement. I do think Paradise Pier was a more pleasing space to spend time in. And you go to Pixar Pier, it's not Disney's best sort of environmental work. It's like, as you sort of said, stickers. It's just sort of like Pixar decals on stuff.
Yeah. I like the Incredibles theme on Incredicoaster. Did you prefer California Screamin'?
I did because I don't like the babies on like Spears. Mm.
I can't argue with that. I cannot argue with that. Okay, I think we've wrapped that one up. Now it's your turn, Mr. Todd.
Well, I was going to ask you, so since we started on DCA, and I know we'll probably talk about some other parks, but maybe just sort of, I wanted to touch on, so the changes coming to DCA, they're building Coco, and they've announced an Avengers coming to DCA. There is, you know, an online rumor. I don't know anything about it, so, like, I don't have any inside information, but there has been a debate if they should put Zootopia instead of Avatar. And, you know, that's sort of fueled by, you know, some former Imagineers talking about things online. But I was just sort of wanted to ask, what would you prefer, Avatar or Zootopia in DCA?
I would prefer, I was actually talking to my barista about this yesterday. I only frequent coffee shops where the people who make coffee are very well versed in every park, including Tokyo Disney Sea. And they were like that. They were really hyped. We were talking about this exactly. They were really hyped about Avatar coming here. And it's the first person I've actually spoken to in person that was really, really excited about that. However, I do feel like Zootopia is a better fit for this local crowd. I think that a Zootopia land is more visually robust than maybe kind of a scenic Avatar one. And for a crowd that is primarily visiting over and over and over, I think that having that sort of discovery built in and kind of it being a little busier, a little more chaotic, a little more like a metropolitan vibe, I do think that would be a better place to revisit as a local than something calming like Avatar. So I'm leaning towards that. How about you?
Really interesting. I go back and forth and I don't have like a strong, so like, I don't want to sound wishy-washy and I'm afraid I'm going to, because there's a part of me that's like, there's nothing in California Adventure that would be as grand or as beautiful as an Avatar area could be. Really do love Pandora and Animal Kingdom. I do think it's a beautiful space. And what they did in Animal Kingdom is it's an IP land, but it's so divorced from the timeline of the films that it kind of doesn't necessarily feel like an IP land.
I know, I agree. It just feels like a nature preserve in a way.
A nature preserve, exactly. So like, there's a part of me that's like, there's nothing in DCA that would be like as grandly pretty as that. And there's also a part of me that is sort of, it's not necessarily like a world I need to continue to live in, you know? And, you know, there's all these conversations online about, does Avatar have the cultural resonance of, you know, Zootopia or these other films? I think probably Zootopia is a better overall fit. And I like it because it would sort of Cartoon City would sort of work well with that Hollywood land juxtaposition.
Yeah, you're so right.
So it would feel, and if you're talking about Hollywood land, you're still talking about like animation, and there's the animation building nearby. So you could more easily draw the connection of, you know, between Hollywood animation and then going into a Zootopia area. So I'm going to miss the Monsters attraction, it is one of my favorite dark rides in the park. It's just so cute and charming. Underrated sort of attraction. So I go back and forth. I don't have like a strong opinion on, part of me wants the beauty of Avatar. Part of me does agree with you that Zootopia would be a better fit for what DCA is.
Well, can I sway you with one single sentence, Todd?
Yeah, go for it.
If we had Zootopia, we'd probably have puppetry.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I do love the puppets.
We love to see the Walt Disney Company employ puppeteers. We love to see it.
I do love the puppets. Yeah. So, and I haven't been to Zootopia Land in Shanghai. Have you been there, right?
No, I haven't, but we did an episode on it because my friend Rachel worked on it, which is very exciting. Oh, cool. Oh, you know, cool. Rachel, yes.
Yes. I remember that episode, but I didn't know if you'd actually seen it in the flesh. But it looks beautiful. It looks like there's full of life, and it looks like there's a lot of activity, which I think would be welcome in DCA as well. So
All right.
It is a little weird because it is a ride with, you know, police officers, but you know, we can talk about that later.
I know that you were going to have the definitive word on that, and I can't wait to read it if it happens. Okay, I'm like nervous for whatever you're going to pull out. I'm scared.
It's your turn.
That was yours? Oh, easy. Okay, I survived. Okay. For all of you listening, Todd and I have a group chat with a few of our colleagues, friends, and I did talk to them on the side.
Okay, fair.
And they were like, this is a good one. You have to ask it. So the next discussion topic, dear Todd.
Yeah.
What's better, Disney World or Disneyland?
Are we talking... So we're talking the entire resort.
We're talking resort-wide.
At Disneyland.
Unfortunately, no. wrong answer.
I'm going to have to strike one off my list, and we could talk about it here, because I was going to ask you sort of like, what is the theme park capital of America?
Isn't that like their like trademark slogan?
It's not correct. It's Southern California. But Disneyland...
Oh my God.
we've got like the park with one of the most coasters in Magic Mountain. We've got the original theme park in Disneyland. We've got an older theme park in Knott's Berry Farm. We've got one of the best Universal parks in Universal Studios Hollywood. I'll tell you why I think Disneyland is, why my experience at Disneyland is higher than my experience at Walt Disney World. And this isn't like a criticism of Walt Disney World. I love spending time at Walt Disney World. I try to go once a year. I don't go as often as you, but, you know, I love my time at Walt Disney World, and I love Animal Kingdom. And I don't really spend any time in the Magic Kingdom when I go to Walt Disney World, because Disneyland is so superior. But it has more attractions. It has the better versions of every attraction that we both share. But it's also, I love the history of Disneyland. I love the fact that it was, you know, as Disney likes to say, it was the only park that Walt walked in. But it that does give it that sort of history. And it is the park that set the medium. It set the tone. Like Walt Disney World wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Disneyland Park. Disneyland Paris, Shanghai Disneyland, none of these places would exist if it wasn't for Disneyland Park. So it defined what the modern theme park is. And then with DCA right next door, you can walk back and forth. You could have go Keller Play Circle, have a nice lunch or dinner, have a beverage, adult beverage if you're a grown up. Or, you know, and so I just feel like it's more compact, it's more doable, and there's more overall attractions.
So I actually agree with everything you're saying, and yet I know inherently that you're wrong.
Okay.
It's well, like, I agree.
What's your main argument that is incorrect? The things I like about Walt Disney World that are better, like Walt Disney World has better hotels. I do think it's weird, aside from the price of airfare, which is, you know, crazy right now.
Yeah.
But I can go to Walt Disney World for 4 days and spend less than I would at Disneyland for 4 days, which I do find sort of odd. But, you know, but so I do like Walt Disney World's hotels. I love the monorail. I could ride the monorail back and forth between Transportation Ticket Center long and be happy.
No, literally. Literally. Yeah,
if they put like a little like dessert tray and something in there.
I was going to say, put a Joffrey's in my hand. Stop. Yeah. Stop the Contemporary. Get a Joffrey's. Get a sweet treat and then pop back on. Heaven.
Exactly. So yeah, but what is your main argument that tips the scale for Walt Disney?
So I completely understand when people are like deeply enamored with Disneyland. It makes sense from the historical perspective. It is more manageable. I also love that their Fantasyland is impervious to Lightning Lane. Like, we still have a piece of a theme park in its semi-original form because there's literally not space to add ways to skip a line. Like, I love that we have that little, ooh, they have the little like taste of kind of OG Disneyland. I think I agree with all of that. But to me, Disney World is the big show. Disney World is like the big dream. Like, if we had more space and we could build even more things, what would we build? Like, to me, Disneyland is the first draft and Disney World is the story you publish. And I just love that it's endless. Like, it's truly boundless. You can go a zillion times and there's always something new that you've never done. And while at Disneyland, that can also be true because for me, it's the canoes. There's no way I'm exercising when I'm at Disneyland. But at Disney World, it's just, there's so many things that I've been going professionally for over a decade and I still haven't stayed at every single hotel. Like, I still have things and experiences that I haven't done. And so to me, Disney World really feels like a Disney city. It feels like a robust location, whereas Disneyland Resort is somewhere I know and love, but it's just not, the scale of it doesn't entice me as much at the end of the day.
You know, it took me a while to get to this point because we both grew up in the Midwest. I grew up outside of Chicago. You grew up in the Chicago area as well. And so like our family vacations were to Walt Disney World. They weren't to Disneyland. So we would go to Walt Disney World every year for, you know, 7 to 10 days. So Walt Disney World was my home park. And then when I came out here to go to college and I went to Disneyland for the first time, this would have been before they built DCA, before they built the Grand Californian. So it wasn't, you know, a quote unquote resort, just a parking lot in a park. And like I got on the monorail and like you could see when you're going down Harbor Boulevard, you could see, you know, fast food restaurants. And I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. Like,
oh my God, even back in the day, you liked the theming. You liked to be immersed.
And so like, because you go to Walt Disney World, it's just like you just see trees and swampland when you're on the monorail outside of the parks. Or you see hotels if you're in the Magic Kingdom loop. You know, but if you're going to Epcot, you see mainly just trees and a street. So I was like, you know, it didn't feel immersed. So it took me a while to get here. But I think as I've gotten more into the history of the parks, as I've gotten more into why these places matter, why these things exist, you know, I think I've just sort of tipped the scale toward Disneyland. You know, I love the fact that you could go there and, you know, you could walk on Main Street and you pick up those little phones in the Starbucks and listen to these old timey recordings of 1920s callers. You know, I just love it has those little sort of like Walt era touches. And I also love that, you know, it has Galaxy's Edge and I don't have to go to a separate park to do those two attractions. And I love that it has, you know, Roger Rabbit, which is a great dark ride. And I love that it has Indiana Jones. So it's got all the stuff in one park.
Yeah, it is. There is a lot. There really is a lot that's all close to each other. Like I went I mean, I'm always there. I went a few days ago and I walked from the parking garage and I walked back and I looked at my watch at the end of the day and I only had 7,000 steps. Like I walked around Disneyland all day and didn't crack 10,000 steps because it's that compact, which is just wild that all of that is in that tiny area.
No, when I go there and work and come home with like 5,000, 6,000 steps, and like, why'd I even go? Like, I didn't get in my like exercise for
Yeah, because in your
the
head, you're like, oh, I'm walking between all these lands. I'm busy. I'm moving around. No. And I went all the way back to Toontown and back. Nothing. It's just, I mean, there are benefits to it being small. There are, complications because it's packed when it's packed, but there are benefits, even though I
And I was
ran.
an Epcot kid, and so that was my
Oh, yeah.
park in
Oh,
the
yeah, you
evening.
were.
I have a Figment tattoo, so like I love that park. I still love that park, but it's not the same. And so I don't know. I
Like, do
just
you get, Todd, do you get the Disney, when you get like the Disney rush of glee, do you get that at Disneyland?
I do. Like every time I walk into Disneyland, I feel just like a warming, calming sort of presence. I don't know if that's the rush of glee you're talking about,
Yeah,
but.
I mostly get that at Disney World, where I'm like, oh, I'm here. Like, I'm in the place.
Yeah, I know. So, and Disney World does have Animal Kingdom, which is my second favorite park in North America. So I do love that about it. And when I go to Disney World, I tend to spend at least 2 days in Animal Kingdom. But I don't know. It's the history, it's the charm, it's the fact that you can walk between two parks. There's so much to do. Excuse me. The fact that you can walk between two parks, there's so much to do. And I don't know, I feel like there's still things I haven't done at Disneyland. I think I've done all the attractions at this point because the only time is maybe do like a ride rigging a couple years ago. So the last few things I hadn't done, which was the canoes, I had put that off as well.
I
So,
know, that's not what we're there
but no, once I did it, it was lovely. You're like on, basically you're on the water, like just like a foot above it.
Couldn't be me. Couldn't be me. I'm not roasting out in the heat working for my working for my corn dog. No way. But okay, wow, that was more civil than I anticipated. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, I've been more civil these days,
Well, I'm proud of you then.
So I guess so it's my turn.
Yes.
I guess what is your favorite attraction at Disneyland and why is it it's a small world?
Oh, sweet Jesus, Todd. I think in the business we would call that a leading question, sir. Well, the funny thing is that that is the ride I go on most often now because it's my child's favorite. So I am on it all the time. And it has made me, so it has made me almost hate the Disney World version because the Disneyland one, I am with you on that. It is so far superior. And the holiday version is very nice. I really think I like an overlay. But if I'm there on my own, I am not. Like, I'm simply not going on. It's a small world. Okay, my favorite attraction. For a while, I was a real Space Mountain person. I do prefer it at Disney World to Disneyland, which is a controversial take, I know.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Yes, I know. I know. I know. I know I'm in the wrong. And yet, it just, when I'm at Disneyland on Space Mountain, I don't feel like I could exit that ride with one less limb. And even though like that's never gonna happen, it's just, ooh, like the risk of Disney World. You're like, I'm scared to put my arms up. I don't know what could happen. I just love that so much. And also, like, ooh, there's so much more ride smell at Disney World. I don't know if what it is, it's like the swamp water. Like, ooh, like the rides just have that ride smell. I just, ooh, it's like hydraulics and standing water. I don't know what it is, but it's great. And I get more of it at Disney World. Okay, my favorite ride at Disneyland. Okay, now I'm just visually looking through all of it. Monsters Inc. has been big in the rotation, but it has been boosted by the fact that it's closing. So I feel like that
Right.
doesn't count. I think I'm gonna say Rise of the Resistance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with Rise of the Resistance. I mean, It's a Small World is my favorite attraction just because it's the only ride at Disneyland that feels so authored.
Yeah. I wait, I want to update my answer. I'm gonna say it's a tie between Rise of the Resistance and Peter Pan. I never get to go on
Oh,
Peter
Peter.
Pan. Because I believe, is it Peter Pan's Flight there also? I always feel like the official
Correct.
name. I
I
just say
believe
Peter
so.
Pan.
Yeah, I believe so. I could be wrong, but I believe
To
so.
me, it is okay. I'm going to say Rise of Resistance second place, Peter Pan first, because it's I'm rarely on it, even though I love it, because that line is just brutal. But like the fact that you can go to Disneyland and go on a ride and someone's just like pulling a lever, like we're at a, like we're at a state fair with this IP, craziness. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Peter Pan. I'm gonna go with Peter Pan.
All right, I can respect Peter Pan. You're going with a classic. You're going with a 50s, 1955 attraction. So you're going with, you know, something that makes Disneyland special. So I could agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, Small World, okay. Like I love the Art of Mary Blair, you know, so that is for me, like the entire ride is, you know, as all of us know, is designed in her style. So to me, it's just like a ride through like an art gallery that I've grown to really love over the years. And obviously I love Pirates of the Caribbean and then Haunted Mansion and the other classics. But I don't know, I found once I came out as It's a Small World being my favorite attraction that I got a lot of raised eyebrows.
Well, I okay. Okay, I want to talk.
That's because you just mentioned it's your daughter's favorite attraction. So it's like,
it is,
oh,
but
like
also she's only been on 5 years. Like she's new. She's new to the world. She hasn't been on Rise of Resistance and she's barely been on Peter Pan because her mom is impatient. Do you get angry or frustrated when the boats start bumping into each other?
No, because I get to stay longer in that universe.
Okay. I don't know why. There's something in me where I'm like, oh, operationally, should it be doing this? Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know. My brain like short circuits and I try to just tamper it, but it still bothers me and I don't know why.
I try to make it my last ride of the day, like Pirates of the Caribbean. Like if I'm going to do like a ride day at Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean is usually the first attraction I do because when we went to Walt Disney World, that was my dad's favorite attraction. So we would rush to it in the park. So just like out of homage to him and tradition, I always try to make Pirates my first attraction. But then like I like to end the day with It's a Small World because it's also, you know, 14, 15, 16 minutes long and you can just sort of like relax and look at the dancing figures. And it's so weird too. Like if you really look at it, you know, like everything is like these weird, crazy, psychedelic animals. Like it's not just sort of like it's not people talk about, oh, it's just a bunch of dolls. It's like weird dolls. Like they're not.
Yeah. And some of them like sometimes want to be a little wonky.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So, all right. But I'm not going to argue with Rise of the Resistance. It's definitely the best modern Disney attraction.
I hadn't been on it in a while. Again, like if stuff is tricky to go on and if I'm there with Pearl, I can't go on it. But I went with some friends and was like, oh, this ride still rocks. And we were in the second row of the ride vehicle and the front row was also a handful of friends, but they had never been on it. And being on it with people who have never been on it was so fun, even though we did not know them. But all of their reactions were so, I mean, they were just so endearing because like,
oh, I love that. Yeah.
Like even after all this time, after Trackless isn't as special anymore. Like we have a lot of Trackless stuff globally now. Like, oh, like they were just blown away by it. And I was like, yeah, this ride still rocks. It still rocks. It's crazy what they did. It's really good.
Yeah. Really a few months ago, I was on it with some people, some strangers who'd never been on it before. And they had no idea the drop was coming and they all screamed. And then like at the end of the ride, they all clapped. And I just like, was like, oh, kind of like teared up a little.
Yeah, it's a good one. There's a lot of philosophies out there telling you how you should pack for a trip. Ooh, a capsule wardrobe. Ooh, patterns that function as basics. No, I am done with people telling me what to wear because I'm doubling down on a new kind of travel philosophy. I'm just gonna wear whatever I love wearing at the moment. Is my suitcase a little chaotic? Maybe to an outsider, but I am blissfully happy once I get to my destination because I have the wacky dress, the unexpectedly fancy outfit, and the casual comfies I crave when I crave them. And there is nowhere else I need to go to make those looks possible but Quince. No matter what you're looking for, Quince has the essential pieces to make your wardrobe sing. The fabrics are elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything works without overthinking it. I love Quince because, well, first of all, they're using incredible premium materials, and by cutting out the middleman, you're paying 50 to 80% less than similar brands at a price point that just feels right, all without sacrificing quality. The most versatile item I own and the most used item in my wardrobe is, as you know, my Quince bike shorts. I wore them with a cropped t-shirt when I was on my recent Dollywood trip. I also wore them with an oversized black sweater and felt very classy to have this like black on black, like chic, off-duty look. They truly took me from tourist attractions to Buc-ee's to the airport. But I also dress them up with like a little cutie tunic on top when I'm on a beach vacation, or under a shorter dress to make a dress work with flats if that's all you got in your suitcase. I truly believe every piece at Quince can be that item that makes your whole wardrobe make sense. And wearing whatever I love at the moment just always seems to include something from Quince. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use by heading to quince.com/amusing for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/amusing for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/amusing. Okay, Todd, I think we've made it to my third and final topic. And I don't know what you're going to say about this, but I would love to know your take on theme park food festivals.
Interesting.
We got Epcot, we got DCA. I don't think there's anything else if it's the bill, but mostly those two. I mean, there's Knott's, but I don't really, I don't go to the Boysenberry Festival anymore, so.
Wait, why don't you go to the Boysenberry Festival?
I should have thought about that before I said that out loud. I went a few years ago with my husband, Ben, who you know, and we had a Boysenberry quesadilla. And the way we tell the story is that we usually ask people and say, where do you think the Boysenberry was in the quesadilla? And every answer is wrong because it wasn't inside the quesadilla. It wasn't part of the cheese. It was the tortilla. It was a Boysenberry tortilla. And I'm just like, they're doing too much with fruit here. I'm tapping out. Like, I don't need a I don't need a Boysenberry tortilla. That's not something I need in my life. There's a reason that's not a staple of Mexican culture because it's not that good. Knott's is a great park, but not some. If I'm driving all the way there, I'm going to Disneyland.
I love the Boysenberry Festival. I did notice in recent years, it's more like Boysenberry flavored. Like, there's not actual real Boysenberries in the stuff, but I think that has to do with the difficulty. There's not many farms that make Boysenberries anymore.
Yeah.
But on the question of food fests, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm maybe like a 5. I could take or leave them.
Oh, okay.
You know, I know we have like walked around food fests before, and I know we have had this conversation at times. I do agree with you on the sense if a food item is that good, it should just be on the menu somewhere.
Thank you.
I do 100% agree with you on that. And I don't think a lot of times the food fests, you know, I don't think they're a great deal because every item is between $9 or $11 these days, or $10. And they're all just a couple bites and they all feel a little fast foody, or a lot of them feel a little fast foody. You know, I like when they change up the menu at a Lamplight Lounge or something and you can go get a nice dish. Or, you know, whatever. But the actual, like, kiosks of the food things, you know, I don't really write about them. I don't do, like, a big, like, here are the best, you know, 5 food kiosks. You know, I think at the LA Times, we found there's not a huge audience for that. There are, like, places like Disney Food Blog that do that much better than me. So, like, that's just something I see to those outlets, you know. And I think for us, and for me, it's also not something like I don't get a big kick out of running around all day going from food kiosk to food kiosk. I like that it adds a sense of life to the park. I like that there's, you know, with Disney Food and Wine, there's, you know, some music and there's that little goofy show and the chef show, which is fun.
Yeah, so the entertainment's always good.
Yeah, so it adds a sense of life to the park. But when it comes to the actual food kiosks, I could take them or leave them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I do think sometimes there's like a really fun dish that I would maybe go out of my way to get. I will never say an ill word about Lunar New Year, the only festival I partake in, because I think it's perfect. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And the fact that, like, I don't know if, I'm sure you remember this, Universal Studios Hollywood used to have Lunar New Year and then they just stopped doing it one day.
Oh, I forgot that they stopped doing it.
Remember
they did it.
Yeah, but remember they had it in that, what do they call that big open like helicopter landing space? At the front of the park. What is that? The place that I saw you at for FanFest nights. What is that area called? Like the hub?
I don't know what that area is called.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just like empty.
That little circular area.
Yeah. Like that's where they had it. And they had like, I think Poe was there or one of the characters. Like there was just all this stuff. And then now it's gone. And I just love that Disneyland is still doing Lunar New Year because there's really nowhere else that you can experience it like that. And also, I think they do an incredible job of honoring different cultures as part of it. I just think they do a great job at Lunar New Year. But the rest of the festivals, it doesn't really do anything for me. I don't like getting food and then being like, where am I going to sit? Which is somewhat of a universal all around Disneyland resort issue at the moment. But that's
agreed.
You just walk to Flo's and hope for the best. That's what I always do. Hopefully you find an outdoor table with shade. But it just, I don't know. I'm kind of like, this is not the ideal setup for making food products. A temporary kitchen is never ideal. Like a real proper kitchen is a better place to cook food in, I think. Sometimes they have bangers. Like there's a violet lemonade at Epcot that has always been really good, but it's not something I'm a fan of. And also, I don't think we've talked about this, but if you're ever at Epcot during a festival at nighttime, or especially on a weekend night, people are really intoxicated. Like, yeah. The crowd generally is pretty, pretty intoxicated in a way that I don't like to be a part of. Like, I don't like to move through a crowd like that as though you're at a late night concert, but it's just people at the festival. And that's because there's a lot of reasons to drink fun things at these festivals. I'm not ragging on that. It's just like, oh, it's definitely a different crowd than you'll get anywhere else at Disney parks otherwise. And it's not one that I really want to be in.
I've been at Walt Disney World twice during Epcot, various fests that they do. And all their fests have like food kiosks and special things. And I will say, yeah, it's a very intense sort of thing. Like even early in the day, like even around 11, I was like, people are already like partying it up.
when am I getting my next Joffrey? So I'm like, it could not be me. Could not be me getting a seasonal drink ever. I was curious what you thought, because it's also like, it's this thing that we know is being done because it makes money. That's why you do things like this. And it's drawing tourism to both of the parks. It's making people go because they like to participate in them. But it is the juxtaposition against the, you know, lovingly crafted themed environments behind it. It is just a little more like, look, a fun sushi. Like it's not as thought through as some of the permanent experiences. And so
I don't like about the food fest, as you just sort of alluded to, is like when you're walking through like the area around Little Mermaid, that concourse, and you hear like pop music. Like I just want to hear orchestral. You know,
yes.
If I'm at home, I'll listen to Haim. Like I like the band,
yes, but yes, like yes.
I don't want to hear it in Disneyland.
I was like, listen, shout out for Hanukkah. I get it. We don't always want to hear Bas Yahoo. Like there's very limited options. But it is funny to be like, oh, those three local girlies? When you're like truly in a themed land, it is a little like, oh, wait, why? Oh, Jewish? Okay. Like it just takes, it's like a long thought process. I appreciate it. Again, I will take any Hanukkah visibility we can get. But it is, I'm right there with you. It's a little like, wait, what? What's happening? It's a little confusing.
Yeah. And the only other thing I thought of on Food Fest is, like, I remember we were both friends with the folks at Disney Food Blog, and I was reading one of their write-ups of, like, you know, one of the chicken wings at one of the Disneyland DCA Food Fest. And their write-up was, you know, they're not quite as good as Buffalo Wild Wings. And I'm like, well, Buffalo Wild Wings wings aren't that good to begin with. So, like, why do I want these wings?
Well, I haven't had, we called it B-Dub-3 back in the day. I don't know why, because there's two W's. I haven't had them in 20 years, but they slapped when I had them a long time ago.
No, I mean, yeah.
Should we go back? Is there one in LA?
There is one in LA. It's actually close to me. It's near.
Can we go?
It's on the border of downtown and Chinatown.
Wait, can we go?
Yeah, we can go.
I want to go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
I'll go. Yeah, I can't get you to Margaritaville, so I'll take Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay, but we met at a common place, Todd. We went to Bubba Gump, which I think it had everything we needed. It had items for you. It had items for me and my broken stomach. It was great.
It did.
What did I just order like a whole steamed head of broccoli?
You did have a whole
head of and then like of plain broccoli. Chicken. Well, lately, as someone who is filling out every Disneyland survey, when they're like, what would you like more of? And I'm like, healthy food. I can't get a plain chicken breast anywhere at these parks usually. And so to go to Bubba Gump, be able to get some plain chicken, enough to sustain me. If I wanted a treat, then I'd have enough protein as a layer to survive. Just saying, it's nice. Though if they had a festival booth that was like green juice, a kebab of plain chicken, and like Erewhon's finest energy bites, like I'd be 10 out of 10 food fest. There's never healthy options. And it's frustrating because, you know, some of us don't process things as well.
Fair enough. It's hard. I don't disagree with that. I don't go in. I'm not a churro or turkey leg person. So I tend to.
Wait, what is your like theme park snack? What do you?
So if I'm having like a theme park snack, like on the level of like a churro or turkey leg, I would gravitate toward the corn dog at Disneyland.
Oh, hell yeah. That's a man of taste, people. Are you willing to get a corn dog anywhere but the Little Red Wagon?
I always want to go to the Little Red Wagon. I did get a corn dog once in DCA, and I don't know. I didn't really taste a big difference. So like,
oh, but yeah, it's just the branding of the wagon feels so.
It's the branding of the wagon, and it's that sort of off Main Street, and
yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I haven't had one in a long time. Ooh, that would be good. That'd be good. Okay, those are all my topics. I think we have just one left from you.
Well. This is off the top of my head. This wasn't a one I wrote down. So if there is something that we could import from Walt Disney World, which you prefer over Disneyland for reasons I don't properly understand. But if there is something we could import from Walt Disney World, you know, attraction-wise, to Disneyland, what would you want that to be?
Well, herein lies the problem, because I feel like even though I am somewhat newer to the Disney game than people who really grew up and fell in love with it as a child, I feel like there is so much baked in nostalgia at Disney World. Like these old, like the old buildings, the ride smell, like I feel like anything you transferred would be newer and it just wouldn't feel the same. It wouldn't feel as like special and old. But if I had to bring something, I mean, my brain's going straight to Epcot. I think just like,
yeah, that's the correct park.
I guess just, you know what? I'm going to take it back, but you're not going to be mad. I'm going to say, if we could get a people mover back, if we could get a functioning people mover in Tomorrowland, I think I could die happy.
Oh, so like I'm actually frustrated with that answer because you went to classic Disney attraction, and I can't argue with a people mover because like we would love a functioning people mover. In,
like I want something retro, but like, I love Living with the Land. If you brought that here, it would be like, what? Like, it just wouldn't make sense. Spaceship Earth, where would they put it? How many Howard Johnsons would they have to bulldoze to build a Spaceship Earth here? You know what I mean? So I would love a transportation. I would also love something. This is what like when I was like really just blue sky thinking, when they were like changing, you know, it was like Star Wars Galaxy's Edge was opening. What are they going to do about Star Tours? I was like, oh, what if they build it at DCA and then there's like a tunnel underground? I would love something that transports you from Disneyland to DCA, because the monorail does not do that for people who are not local to Disneyland. The monorail does not, it goes through DCA, but it don't stop. I would love some sort of underground attraction that brings you between parks. So if a people mover in Tomorrowland could do that, that would give me a little of like that dark Spaceship Earth energy. It would be special, but also be transportation, which I want. I want like a people mover, a casual transportation that is an attraction. I would love that.
Yeah, I can't argue with that because, you know, I was going toward like, I just want a mini Arendelle.
A mini Arendelle?
Yeah.
You really? You don't think you would get sick of a Frozen Land?
No, I love that attraction at Epcot. I think it's one of Epcot's stronger attractions. I'm not going to say best, of course, you know, because there's so many classic attractions at Epcot, Spaceship Earth, Living with Land. I love both of those. And Journey into Imagination, which is a shell of its former glorious self. But I can't criticize anything with Figment. But I do love that Frozen attraction. And I would just love, it's an attraction that Disney has been improving upon in its international parks. I haven't been in the most recent editions, but I've watched all the ride-through videos. So it's an attraction Disney has been making improvements upon that I just feel like it deserves to be at Disneyland. It's one of Disney's most popular franchises. There's two movies on the way.
Yeah, there are. I forgot about that.
So is there an attraction at the Disneyland Resort that you think should be removed and people would get mad at you for?
Oh my God. So it's like a lot of times, which I wonder if you've also felt this with ranking anything, there's like your brain and then professional your brain. So like there's this stuff that the ranking that I would, like I did ride rankings for Travel and Leisure a million years ago, sure. And I got roasted. But it wasn't my personal perspective. It was like the professional, what I professionally thought were the actual rankings. Like that. So professionally, my answer would be different. But if I could remove one thing, I can't believe I'm saying this, Todd. I'm going to remove Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
Oh, no.
People are mad at me in real time. While I do think that moment where, like, you know, it, like the drop, everyone can see it. It's kinetic. I love that. First of all, like, when they introduced the new version of the ride, I reported on it favorably. I liked it. But the truth is, I haven't gone back on it because I don't want to get wet. I don't like being wet at a theme park. I don't like having a soggy diaper butt. I don't want it. So for me personally, I'm not really going on this ride. And so much of the ride is just hidden. You know, it's indoors. You don't really see it. And if that space could be reimagined with something that was more outdoors, because like you see, I'm not cutting a water ride from DCA, because I feel like even though that ride is a pretty standard raft ride, I want to keep calling it Kali River Rapids. It is not Kali River Rapids. What am I blanking on? What is it?
Grizzly River Run.
Thank you. Like Grizzly River Run adds to the land. It has the same kinetic energy, but there's places that you can walk past it and like it's gleeful to see people on it. I think that's nice. Tiana's Bayou Adventure, it's like that whole area feels a little like a hallway because you're boxed in by the attraction that, again, you only get to see if you're willing to have your sneakers completely soaked at the end of the day. So for me, like instead of that, it was more of an outdoor ride that all of us could, like, I feel like it would breathe so much life into that land. Like maybe you could see it from Hungry Bear and like look over a perch and see the ride. Like that is what I would remove just to provide something more visual for the rest of the park. Because also a lot of stuff on that side of the park is in. You see a little bit of Winnie the Pooh, I'll give them that. But, you know, Haunted Mansion is inside. Like Pirates is inside unless you're in the queue. Like it's in. Whereas a Fantasyland, you're seeing Dumbo, like you're seeing Mad Tea Party, you're seeing all these things happen. And it's really fun to be involved even if you're not on the ride. But in that part of the park, and I know someone's going to be like, but the canoes move, but you can see the canoes move. In that part of the park, it just kind of feels like there's a wall. Like once you leave Haunted Mansion, it's like there's not much until you get to the fork in the road. So I would sadly remove it. What would you remove that people would be mad at you about?
I would remove Tiana's, but I do want to specify, like, so part of your frustration with the attraction is the wetness. Like, it's not the characters, it's not the IP.
It's the wetness. It's almost exclusively the wetness. And again, I have not been on it. I'm not doing my job because I haven't been on it, but I have heard that there have been animatronic issues. And if I am walking around with soggy sneakers, I best be seeing Tiana in her full form. If Tiana is not moving and I am soaking wet, if I have wet underwear and Tiana is not like truly presenting to me at the end of the ride, it's game over.
No, I understand the wetness. I have a friend who came with me and ran into a Disneyland. We went on that. We didn't go on that attraction. We went on Pirates of the Caribbean and she got a little wet on that. And she was like, my day's over.
Wait, which I should be friends with your friend. Same brain.
But I think... I love Tiana's. I do think it's an improvement. I love the Princess and the Frog being in the park. But if I were to remove something, and I don't know if this would be super controversial, although they just improved it at Walt Disney World just a couple of weeks ago, I would remove the Buzz Lightyear attraction.
Whoa. That is not even like top 10 of what I thought you were going to say.
I'm curious what you thought I was going to say. But so I think that is one of my least favorite attractions at the Disneyland Resort. And I think it's outdated. I think as a person who plays a lot of video games, there's nothing I can do on that attraction that I can't do on, you know, my iPhone in 2026.
you're not wrong. I've never thought of it this way. You're not wrong.
Yeah, I think it's like a misguided theme park design. It's sort of like, we're going to build a video game attraction and we're just going to put you in a video game, as opposed to actually like using interactivity in a creative or useful way.
Okay.
So I just feel like Dark Ride, you could put a little Dark Ride in there. They've got new IPs to play with. Or they could just improve it. I've heard good things about the Walt Disney World changes. I haven't been on it. It just opened a couple of weeks ago. I've heard good things. So maybe that improvement does, quote unquote, fix my issues. But having not gone on it, I can't say that it has. So I would say that would be the ride I would get rid of.
Wow. I always forget it's there. I truly forget it, like, haven't thought about it in months.
Oh, and yeah, I never go on it. I haven't been on it since I had to do ride rankings for the paper. That was the last time I went on it, and probably won't go on it ever again unless, like, a friend wanted to do it. And then, like, I would do it with that person. But, you know, and I would keep my mouth shut until after we wrote it. And then I would be like, I can't believe you made me do this.
Unless you were there with me and you'd be like, absolutely not from the start. love Disneyland. Okay. We have to wrap up. We've been talking for so long, sure. But I have one final question for you that just popped in my head that I feel like is the perfect,
I'll do it quick.
Perfect, yeah. Question to end this interview with. What single announcement are you hoping for most at D23 this year?
Oh, wow. Everybody, I think the first thing that jumps into most Disneyland, the mind of Disneyland fans would be Tomorrowland, but I've given up on that. And that's just not, I don't think it's priority. And I don't think it's priority because Tomorrowland does have a fair number of attractions, you know, Star Tours, Space Mountain, and, the submarine and Buzz Lightyear and Autopia that still draw people. So there's not like a huge incentive to quote unquote fix it. So what I would want is the pipe dream would be an original attraction. What I've always wanted is like a Funhouse dark ride in Pixar Pier.
Oh my God, that would be so good.
Like something that sort of plays off like Mystic Manor. And you could even make it like IP. Like you could make like the like Toy Story, like you could just take that monkey from Mystic Manor and make it like the Toy Story monkey or something.
That would be so fun.
Just sort of like, so my pipe dream would be like a original attraction, but sort of like a fun house, sort of dark ride, and sort of like a Haunted Mansion, but silly and goofy and fun. Not that Haunted Mansion isn't silly and goofy and fun, so that was a bad thing to say, but just isn't trying to be like spooky and scary. Something that is just like silly and fun housey and mirrors and craziness. So that would be like my pipe dream. On a smaller scale, more reality would be something with Disneyland Forward that's going to use those expansion spaces next to the Pixar Pier Hotel. Place Hotel.
Great answers.
So yeah, do you have one?
I mean, I have a few. I'm going to do an episode on it, so I'm holding back. But besides Hyperion Theater, which is always top of mind, I would love to see something happen to the Carousel of Progress building in Tomorrowland at Disneyland.
Of course.
I'm not asking for a whole land redo. I'm not being greedy, but that does feel like such wasted space. I know it's currently being used for Imagination Campus, I believe, to the point where I tried to go in there just because there's a bunch of stuff to look at. And they were like, you got to get out. So it's not even like, even when it was being used as a kind of Star Wars museum, it's not even that anymore. And it's just the DVC lounge upstairs. So it
the
is
DVC
this kind
lounge,
of, yeah, it's like this non-public space that I think could be really, really utilized much better.
Oh yeah, 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah, could be a huge moneymaker if there was some sort of fun bar or like non-alcoholic, like some sort of like, they were only doing like, you know, like an anti-gravity style Tomorrowland here, ice cream with a pop rock in it, something. Like if that was there, I think it would be beneficial for everyone.
Perfect. Wouldn't disagree.
Thank you so much, Todd. This is amazing. And I'm going to text you immediately after this about Buffalo Wild Wings.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back, Becky.
I just woke up from my 2-second nap. It's great.
Guys, I let her rest for a few moments. And then I was like, we need to resurrect her. There's Disney discounts and we got to talk about it.
If you are a Disney Plus subscriber, they have a little perk for you. It does require 2-night minimum stay, which isn't a problem.
Which
in
is
Disney
very,
World, right?
Very low.
Exactly. Valid most nights, June 21st to August 15th. Prices per night for room only, as low as All-Star Sports in a standard room, $99 a night.
These are prices that I remember, Becky, from when I booked my bachelorette party 11 years ago.
Years ago.
11 years ago.
Port Orleans Riverside is $169 in a standard room. Art of Animation in a Cars Family Suite. Are you sitting down? Mm-hmm. $249. Animal Kingdom Lodge, Savannah View, $369 a night plus.
Do you know how much money I've paid for that view? It is not
a lot more than that.
It is not under $400, I can tell you that.
No, these are restricted just to these resorts and just these views, and they are going to go quickly. So if it's something you really are interested in and you're a Disney Plus subscriber, give us a call. Let us know. We'll be happy to see if we can find these for you. But we have not seen these rates this low in years and years and years. On top of that, they still have their Get a Free Dining Plan rolling. So if the room rate was enough to get you there, you can purchase a non-discount minimum four-night, four-day package that includes room and ticket with Park Hopper and get that free dining plan if you book by April 30th. So that one's going to come up on us pretty quickly if they don't extend it. And it's for most stays June 28th to December 21st. So it goes for the rest of the year. There's some blockout dates in there, obviously, for the holidays, but it does cover a lot of space for you. And if that doesn't appeal to you, they do have the save up to 30% off rooms for late summer and early fall, 30% from July 30th to October 3rd, with the Florida residents saving up to 35% and pass holders saving up to 40%. But wait, there's more. You don't want to go to Disney World. Don't worry. We got you. Alani is there. And they've come up with a new date for their save up to 25% rate for five or more nights and 20% off four consecutive nights. And that's most nights August 9th to October 18th if you book by September 27th. Last but not least, because of course there's always something at Disneyland.
Always.
Our home park. Mm-hmm. Save up to 25% on select Disneyland Resort hotels May 22nd to September 7th.
Wow.
And it is for the Grand Californian, the Disneyland Hotel, and the Villas at Disneyland Hotel. But that has to be completed by September 8th. So right now, if you want to experience Disney in many of its forms, there's an offer for you.
Incredible. And don't forget, guys, $50 kids tickets at Disneyland this summer. So you can, you literally use your savings on tickets for young children or children, any children, older children, all of them.
All the children.
In your family. And oh, and mine just ran through the house. It's like she knew. It's like she knew that it was possible for us to go to Disneyland. Thank you so much, Becky. These are amazing. And I'm so glad to be able to share them.
Well, thank you for having me as usual. I love sharing these details. And of course, for those who want to look at the cruises and say you're listening to us right now and it's midnight, just go to bookmeicruise.com and you can pull up all the Disney cruises there as well.
Oh, you're the best.
See ya.
Hi, Carly. My name is Carrie and I am calling in with a question. And I think if I were to summarize my question, it would be, how would you recommend for a theme park enthusiast located in Southern California to make the most out of an annual trip to Disneyland? And obviously within that question, there's some context that, you know, I'm trying to kind of reel it in and be a little bit more financially responsible for myself and my young family. I have a five-year-old son, and if we could, if we had the means to be at Disneyland every single day, all of the time, I'm sure we would. But the reality in that is obviously we live an hour away, it becomes a whole event. So what is the right way to balance and create a really meaningful experience that will satiate and satisfy my family for an entire year? And maybe there's a bonus to that. What's the right freaking frequency to make it to Walt Disney World and how to balance that? Because, of course, you know, in the world of trying to plan, we wanted to reel it in last year and ended up at Disneyland six times and spent a whole week in Walt Disney World. So maybe this isn't realistic, but realistically, how would you recommend achieving that if that's something I wanted to achieve? Okay, thank you for the call. Love you. Bye.
Hello, and thank you so much for your call. Now, there were two big questions, just to reiterate for anyone listening, that came out of this. One, how would you recommend a theme park enthusiast in Southern California makes the most out of an annual trip to Disneyland? And two, what is the right frequency to make it to Walt Disney World? I phrased that wrong, but I think you know what I mean. After listening to this call, I think this is actually one question, and I'm going to answer both of these together. Because if we're seemingly committed to spending money on a theme park vacation, or multiple, it sounds like, whether it's near or far, I just want to make sure we're making the right choice in conjunction with both. First, I would suss out which theme park resort is more exciting to you. Because Disneyland is local, but it kind of is sounding like a chore. It sounds a little bit like when I talk to parents who also live in Los Angeles, who are like, oh yeah, I gotta get around to taking them to Disneyland. I haven't done that yet. It's something that like no one's really excited about. They know they would have fun. This is the type of person who like, you know, doesn't go to Disney at all. They know that they would have fun, but they're like, oh, I gotta plan it. I gotta do it. It's something that feels more to-do list than something they're dreaming of. And I am getting a little bit of that from your call. So I'm wondering, like, does Disneyland not really feel special? I feel like it might not because you went a few times last year. And if going to Disneyland feels a little like, meh, you know, just kind of like something you do because you live here, but you're currently at home dreaming up a Disney World vacation, that's what I'm talking about when I say feel good money. And that's what we want to prioritize. Because if you can yield more joy from anticipating and planning and dreaming and executing a Disney World vacation, that's going to give you more to look forward to over a longer period of time than just being like, all right, let's do it. Let's go to Disneyland in June and getting in and getting out. And again, this only applies to a situation like this, when you're trying to figure out which park you want to go to. A lot of people are so excited to go to Disneyland, so this would kind of be the reverse. I don't want to seem like I'm dragging Disneyland. It's just, I'm just trying to suss out from the situation as someone who lives in Southern California, and I do feel like Disneyland to me is not as heightened as Walt Disney World. I do want to add, there is a really great Disneyland ticket deal this summer, $50 kids tickets that are also park hoppers, which is amazing. But visiting Disneyland for 1 or 2 days, especially depending on the size of your group, it can add up. Even if you live locally, if you're going for more than one day, you're probably going to get a hotel, which means that you're probably going to stay longer and eat more meals out. And if you'd be happier spending a few days on a proper vacation that even if you have to fly to it with flights being expensive, even if you travel, like that is a vacation that you would plan and look forward to, you might be better off just doing a day at Disneyland a different time in the year to balance it out and actually going whole hog on a real trip. Because let's discuss financials. Like I said, there's a huge summer ticket discount for kids at Disneyland. But in your case, I would maybe hold out for the next SoCal resident discount ticket, which it sounds like you would be eligible for. Because you may need to utilize summer for a longer Disney World trip, despite the weather, yikes, I'll be there too. We're all going to suffer together. It's hot everywhere. And that is my platform. Disney World promotions are currently through the roof through summer and through the end of the year. So I would try to price out which one would be best for you. Again, shameless plug, MEI Mouse Fan Travel. They are so good at helping suss out the different deals and what price is best for you. So I would hit them up because I wouldn't want to do that work, and someone else doing it for you for free is something that I would do myself. So if I was you, I would take a look at Disney World pricing, hold on Disneyland, and then pounce on that next SoCal ticket. The reason I'm emphasizing that is because I was in a similar situation recently. My husband wanted to go with our daughter to Disneyland. He wanted to do a little bit of Disneyland. He felt like it was time to go back again. The 3-day SoCal resident ticket was cheaper than buying him a 1-day park hopper. 3 days at Disneyland Resort, spread across however long we wanted, was cheaper than a 1-day park hopper. If that math works out for you, you can squeeze so much more joy out of that single ticket purchase. And you won't have to worry about hotel, probably. You could if you wanted to stay multiple days. You'd only really have to worry about parking. And the only thing is, those tickets might not come back until early 2027. So it might be worth rolling the dice if you are okay with that. You did ask about frequency in visiting Disney World, and I'm afraid I cannot answer that because I have the opposite problem. Last year, I had an annual pass to both theme park resorts, and I didn't use it enough to justify them. So we're going to Disneyland Resort a lot lately, just simply because I already paid for it, and we bring a lot of our own snacks, and I may as well go. But I can help you with your goal of making the most out of an annual trip to Disneyland, especially if anyone listening is kind of thinking about going to Disneyland but wants to know, like, what could I do to make this really, really special? Unfortunately, Lightning Lane does help you do more. Spending money on that will make it easier to get on rides. And if you are trying to do as much as possible, I lately go and I vibe. But if you really want to do rides, you want to do Disneyland, Lightning Lane is the way to do it. Arriving early is always a huge benefit, both for that and for Disneyland Resort itself. Getting there early, it's going to be quieter, and you can enjoy more right at the beginning of the day before everyone else shows up. I would consider splurging on something special like Blue Bayou, maybe a single, like a Lightning Lane single pass. Oh my God, I'm realizing I don't remember the names of these offhand because my brain just goes, Genie Plus, Genie Plus, Genie Plus. Oh my gosh. Of course it's Lightning Lane single pass. Every time I doubt myself, y'all know, every time I doubt myself, it ends up being right. Journalist brain. Anyway, I would maybe like surprise the people you're with a single ride. They'd be like, oh, we're going on Rise of the Resistance. Yay. Like that would be a really fun way to do something special. That's also pretty easy to accomplish. Always getting something on Etsy for your trip. Always a little special. That's like money you'd spend outside the park, but I do think it does boost your day. And if you want to cover all of the ground while still being price conscious, I would stick to one park. As tempting as park hopping can be, just to make sure you can do it all, because you sounds like you want to get like a lot of bang for your buck. You want to get a lot out of that trip, and sticking to one park is going to save a little money, but also make that easier to do. I hope that was helpful. Let me know what you end up doing. And hopefully I'll see you at Disneyland or Disney World. That's our show. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to our very special guest, Todd Martins of the LA Times. You can subscribe to his perfectly named newsletter, Mr. Todd's Wild Ride, on the LA Times website, or more easily just by clicking the link in the show notes. I couldn't be a bigger fan of Todd, and I'm so honored that he came on the podcast to truly have like a sibling rivalry in real time about all things theme parks. You can rate, review, and follow Very Amusing on Apple Podcasts. Rate and follow us on Spotify. Give us a call about like literally anything at 747 Churros. The wackier, the better. Truly, test me. I just like anything. I love to get a call. When I was at overnight, I went to overnight camp for many years, and getting mail at overnight camp was like the highest high you'll ever experience. And that's how I feel whenever anyone calls the Churros hotline. So I love it. Please just keep calling with any. I mean, we have I'm behind on calls. I shouldn't be telling people to call, but call. I love to get your calls. We have so many I have to get to still, but I love them. If you're planning a trip on Disney World, Disneyland, Universal, Disney Cruise Line, whatever, if you don't want to do any of the work, head to mousefantravel.com/amusing. They're going to plan your trip for free. They're going to make it easy. It's truly like, do you ever hear people talk about like digital assistants? I don't understand how that works, so I've never done it, but that's kind of what this is. You just like send an email or like go on the website and you're like, I'm kind of thinking about going to Disney World. What would it cost? And then boom, 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 they will break everything down for you. They're amazing, and I think that you should plan all your trips with them because it costs you nothing and helps you plenty. Head to mousefantravel.com/amusing and MEI Mouseman Travel are going to hook you up. Follow me at Carly Wiesel across the internet. Join the FOMALY at facebook.com/group/Carly Wiesel. Subscribe to my Instagram, 99 cents a month. I'm posting a lot on there, guys. Like, I used to joke, like, you'll get 99 cents worth of content. And now I'm like, you're getting $7.99 worth of content, but I'm not going to raise the price because that just seems cursed. It's just really fun. It's really fun to have like a group chat within the Instagram platform, even though the tech isn't working so well. But it's just really nice. It's really nice. And I love it. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I post very often in there. It's very fun. And if you subscribe, you understand. It's just really good. It's really fun. I love it. I love it. And I love this. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon.
Hi, honey. It's Mom. So my new microphone didn't work out too well. I sounded like last week that I was in a tunnel. So anyway, I'm back to me. Brandon was so much fun. Oh, my God, the best stories. He sat next to Martha Stewart, and she asked him to help him with her phone. This is epic. I love that stuff. Okay, the Macy's Day Parade. That's why we're here. So much work went into every detail that I even thought, oh, my God, a balloonicle, a self-driving balloon. I never thought anything like that. Who knew? Love learning new things. I'm very amusing. I also went on Brandon's Instagram, and oh my God, he knits the most fabulous sweaters. He has one that says H Mart. It is so good. He's very talented. If you remember like 7 or 8 years ago, you and I were in New York together, and we were watching TV, and the Macy's Day Parade was on, and this giant green dinosaur started heading down the street really slowly. And I said, I've never been to one. Have you? And you said, me either. We both stood up. And we were at a little brunch. We were with other people. We stood up, And we said, we got to go. Let's go. And we left immediately for the train. We ran. We got off. We hustled. We found a spot in the crowd. There was a million people. And we looked down the road, and here comes the green dinosaur. So we got there pretty fast, or the dinosaur was really, really slow. To the caller who called up about a special occasion birthday, our friend Mark from Bubo Bakery, BUBOBakery.com, makes the most outstanding cakes. And I even sent one to Disney. He only does it like he can send them, but he can deliver them in Disney World hotels. And I had him deliver one for Carly's birthday, and her friends were blown away. It was amazing. Well, this was a great episode. I loved every second of it, and I can't wait till next week. I love you, Carly. I love you, Pearl. Bye.